The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
The problem when you use unprecedented measures is how do we get out of them? It's kind of left us in this theoretical mess that nobody really knows how to interpret. Well, Jeff Hyback, Mr. Sunshine, is going to take a stab at it, at least give us an idea of why this is such a mess. It's what really matters. We start now. And welcome to What Really Matters. Jeff Hyback joins us today, and it's been a little while since he and I have had the opportunity to sit down with vacations in the middle and all that. But so, Jeff, it's kind of a strange time. The market seems to have really just gone up, down, but really not gone anywhere. Seems like, as you said in your blog this week, the bulls and the bears are sort of reluctant to make any big bets on things. Maybe it's some of it's the election that's coming within, 60, 70 days. I don't know how many now. I don't really track it that closely. As far as the numbers of days, all right? But, it's just sort of a strange time. Unemployment is so-so. So what do we do with this theoretical mess? What's your take on it? And for somebody just tuning in for the first time, when we talk about unprecedented measures, what would you say they are?
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as saying, well, it's the quantitative easing things that the Federal Reserve did starting in 2010, where they basically created new money to purchase assets from the banks. It could go back to what Congress did as far as basically giving the major banks taxpayer money to bail them out. Fed did almost 0% interest rates for a very long time. They've tried to use this new open door Fed policy where they are trying to tell everybody everything the Fed is thinking. You have the negative interest rates in Europe and Japan. There's all these things that were theories in the economic classrooms, and now they're being put into practice. And what we're seeing is maybe they worked. I'll say it again. Ben Bernanke saved the economy, but yet there's always a cost. If you think about it, if your house burns down and the fireman saves your photo album, you still lost your house. And
so you're basically saying that Bernanke burned down the economy, but hey, we have the housing markets come back a little bit or something.
Yeah, he saved a little bit of it, but there's still a big mess to clean up.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Ben Bernanke basically said, "Well, the fire's out. I'll have fun cleaning it up, Janet." And so nobody knows how you get out of this astronomical balance sheet the Fed owns. Nobody knows how they get off the 0% interest rate. You mentioned the up-down market. I had a chart in the Traders blog this week that looked, instead of looking at a daily basis, it looked at a monthly closing price. And really, we're not much above where we were at back at the beginning of 2015, which isn't when quantitative easing 3 ended. So everybody's kind of just been sitting there going, okay, now what? And now, you mentioned the jobs report.
Yeah.
And coming out of last week, we had the Fed, all the economic minds getting together and had this symposium in Jackson Hole. And they threw out a whole bunch of theories, which is where I got the title of my blog, basically trying to speculate what they should do next or how they can handle the next crisis given where they're at right now. And most people said, okay, it sounds like the Fed's ready to raise interest rates once again in their September meeting. And then we get today's jobs report, which was not as great as the last couple of months, but it also wasn't horrible. Mm-hmm. So now the market's stuck going, well, what's the Federal Reserve going to do with rates? You can make an argument that they should raise rates. You can make an argument that they should keep them where they're at. And you could also make an argument they should do more quantitative easing. I mean, it's such a mess out there that nobody knows for sure what's going on.
So what would you imagine? I mean, is probably no way to predict, but obviously the market surprised us this summer when the Brexit thing happened, but then it also surprised us that it kind of went higher afterwards. It dipped for a bit, and now we're just sort of plateauing, you know, just up, down, and I think you mentioned in your blog slightly negative month for August, but yet we're a little bit above that now, positive week for the market, 0.5% maybe. What are we to make of it? It's just like, feels like we're waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, and that's just it. You know, everybody seems to forget that most people believe the Federal Reserve could prevent a crisis. And then it happened, and then that's when the panic set in. And I talked a little bit this week. I used some data from Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, talking about what they call the risk parity trade, which is, you know, we've all heard, okay, you use treasury bonds to offset your stock exposure. And we've seen a lot of these Wall Street banks because the lobbyists got the job done on Wall Street, and there's really been zero financial reforms on Wall Street to kind of rein in what they're doing and using derivatives, which are basically instruments based on something else. Mm-hmm. But there's no underlying asset behind them besides the good faith of the other party.
What does it mean? Solvency. I saw in the blog when you were talking about the whole issue of these derivatives, you talked about notional value, and it's this enormous, I don't know, a guesstimate that there's $630 trillion in derivatives that, of course, if that fire was ever to get started, I don't know how you'd put it out, but what does that mean?
Well, let's use an example. Let's say I'm a securities dealer, you know, strategic equity management, as is the 401k latte company. Mm-hmm. And I say, you know, I would like to take a position to get into the market, but I don't want to put up a whole bunch of capital. Mm-hmm. And I go to you and I say, Peter, you know, I would like to, you know, take on, you know, I would like $100 million of exposure to the S&P 500. And I will offset that with, you know, by selling $100 million of treasury bonds. And you would swap that and you would say, okay, I'll take the other side. So you would have $100 million exposure of long the treasury market. Mm-hmm. So you'd make money, and $100 million of short. So our notional value of that derivative is $100 million. It's called a swap. Mm-hmm. And it's between two parties. It's off an exchange. There's no regulations of it. It's just, we're going to do it. And then once a month, once a quarter, whatever our contract says, we're going to say, okay, the S&P 500 made 5%. The bond market lost 1%. Therefore, 401k latte company owes me 6% of $100 million.
Okay.
There's no cash exchanged except for that 6%.
Okay.
So there's we would have $100 million of notional value of swaps. Mm-hmm. But your only cash that you're having to use would be that 6% of $100 million that you had to pay strategic equity. And then say the next quarter, it's I made 3% but lost 2%, then you'd have to pay me 1%.
Okay.
And so that's fascinating. That $630 trillion of derivatives, mm-hmm. the market capitalization is only $90 trillion. So we have about seven times the value of the market in derivatives out there. So let's keep using our example. So I have $100 million on my balance sheet as this swap with the 401k latte company. And you said, well, this is working out, you know, okay. And you go ahead and do 10 more of those swaps. And let's say the market goes way against you. You don't hedge those off. And now all of a sudden when the quarterly payment comes up, you owe $50 million. And you say, well, I can't pay it. Well, there's no exchange backing this up. So now my $100 million is worthless.
Wow.
That's the danger of derivatives.
Oof.
And that's what we see happening out there is we don't see investing. We see all these derivatives out there because nobody knows for sure what the Fed's going to do. Now, say I want to get out of it.
Right.
I could just do the reverse swap with somebody else, so then I'm hedged. But then if that other party goes out of business, then I'm no longer hedged.
Okay.
Now, or you and I could come to an agreement and say, okay, we're going to cancel this. But they're not investing money. They're just kind of playing this game with derivatives so that they can make some income without having to put some cash to work.
Wow. And you also cited in your blog the Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway paid like $195 million to get out of any derivative exposure. What do you think that says?
Yep. I think, he's a hypocrite because he said several times that derivatives were weapons of mass financial destruction.
Right.
But two, whenever Warren Buffett tends get into something, people should take note. And also when he tends to get out of something. And remember, he comes from an insurance background, an actuary background. And apparently, what he was receiving as far as premiums go for the insurance on municipal bonds was not worth it. And keep in mind, what he was doing was basically a credit default swap, where if those municipal bonds defaulted, Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway was going to have to pay the holders of those bonds. And him choosing to get out of it is, I wonder, first of all, what company bought him out for him? And,
why?
How much exposure does this other company have?
Right.
I think that's what people really forget is the solutions the Fed did and Congress, what they chose to implement and not implement has done nothing to address what caused the financial crisis. The financial crisis wasn't caused by a housing bubble. It was caused by the instruments that were leveraged against the housing market, all these derivatives, all these loans. You could package up these loans and, issue insurance on them or buy insurance on them. And it's still going on out there. And I think that's what people forget because the Fed didn't punish the people that made the mistakes because Congress didn't let those banks go out of business. They're thinking, hey, the Fed's going to be there to bail us out again when we need it.
Wow.
And therefore, just like a kid, if a kid thinks their parents are always going to save them when they get in trouble, they're going to keep getting in trouble.
Yeah. And they keep going. So, wow. And then you also cited criticism of Yellen on the part of Mr. Gross, the former PIMCO manager. What do you make of that? I think he's justified in what he said, just saying that they're kind of playing games or saying that capitalism, it's just common sense that it can't function at zero bound rates or minus yields.
If you think about it, if I went to my bank and said, I would like to borrow $200,000 to build a house, and oh, by the way, I would also like you to pay me 1% interest, which is a negative interest rate. They'd laugh at you.
Oh, sure they would.
And so what person in their right mind wants to loan money if they're going to get a negative yield? And that's what Bill Gross said. He used to be known as the bond king until he had the gall to start using fundamentals and trying to use economic logic in his management. And despite having decades of outperformance of his benchmark, he trailed it by 2 years and was basically chased out of the firm that he founded.
Wow.
But he's landed on his feet and he appears to be matching his benchmark again at his new company. And he's again talking about the fundamentals what he says, capitalism almost commonsensically cannot function well at the zero bound or with a minus sign on the yield.
Yeah.
And that's just it. He goes, talking to Ms. Yellen, he says, you and your contemporaries have flipped $11 trillion from the left side, which is an asset, to the right side of the global balance sheet. In other words, if you had this asset that was paying you interest, now it's costing you interest. That becomes a liability. Mm. Who in their right mind celebrates that?
Yeah, yeah. It's not making sense. It just isn't. Well, you know, normally this time of year too, Jeff, you always, you know, note that, you know, while the real serious Wall Street money managers have been, you know, off vacationing at the Hamptons, they're now about set to come back, and maybe some of their junior, you know, less senior people have been in charge, and now it's, what have you done? So what do you think that effect might be in this environment?
Yeah, first of all, I got to get me a junior portfolio manager so I can go to the Hamptons.
Yeah, I agree.
My wife was just asking when I plan on taking a vacation again, and I said, oh, I don't know, maybe by Christmas.
There you go.
But yeah, it tends to be, and I don't know if this year we saw so much of it, but you know, we tend to see very light volume in the summer, which we definitely saw this summer. Although volume even before summer started was pretty light. But typically what you see happening is everybody gets back from vacation. The East Coast is back in school. It's baffling to me because, you know, on the West Coast, our kids start school somewhere in July and August. And
right.
then, you know, to not go to school until after Labor Day, you know, that's how it is, I guess. I think in Minnesota as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. The kids start back for the most part next week. Yeah. I mean,
so
some start.
Apparently east of the Mississippi, you guys get a very long summer, and west of the Mississippi, we've been in school for 6 weeks.
Really? Even grade schools have been going for 6 weeks?
Oh, yeah. But then they're done before Memorial Day.
Wow.
So anyways, but what typically happens is, you know, summer vacation season, nobody wants to make a lot of bets on anything. But now that everybody's back in school, most portfolio managers are back at work. They start looking at where they're at for the year, where they think they should be as far as an allocation goes, and kind of setting up their portfolio for the last 4 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, you see a reversal of what happened during the summer months, which, how do you reverse a flat trend, I guess?
Yeah.
You know, maybe we see a big buying spree. Maybe we see a big selling spree. But I don't think the normal seasonal pattern is going to play out, just given what I said at the start of this with the jobs report and this micro focus on what the Fed might do in September with, I mean, it's 0.25%, Peter. And that, you know, I've done the math, and you know, when people are saying, oh, mortgage rates just went down 0.125%. If you look at it on a 30-year bond, we're talking maybe $12 a month. You know, it's on an average mortgage. It's this 0.25% that the Fed's talking about possibly hiking is silly to be focused on.
Mm.
And yet that's all the market cares about because, you know, it's that whole don't fight the Fed analogy that people have said, and they've had the Fed on their side for 7 years, and now they're afraid that the Fed's not going to be on their side, and they're kind of wondering what happens next.
I am perplexed by how big a deal it is because they did raise the lending rate between banks about 0.25%, and yet the 10-year Treasury continued to decline. I don't know. It's well, that is one of your charts from recent weeks. It's that hit that, you know, the look at, you know, can raising the question, can the Feds actually control where rates go? And it's doesn't seem like they're able to do it, but I don't know. It's crazy. So a lot of uncertainty. And I know this, that the market overall doesn't like uncertainty. And so I guess we're gonna have to see how this plays out in the weeks ahead and months ahead. But I would think it brings into question then if things are out of whack, if we truly shouldn't have a market valued as highly as we see it, yeah, there could be significant adjustments. And I would say to people, if they haven't seen the value of active money management played out, you need to go back and look at what happened in 2008. Not that we're going to have that happen tomorrow, but I just really believe we're living in very uncertain times on so many fronts. And whether I'm talking to Republicans, Democrats, young, old, there is such a mishmash right now. And it is a mess, as Jeff points out in his blog. And by the way, if you haven't gone to his blog this week, it's SEM, tradersblog.com. I can't say it'll be the most encouraging thing you'll read, but it will inform you about why things are just so, you know, blah at the moment. Meaning, you know, just no real commitment either way. As he says, the bulls and the bears are sort of waiting, you know, waiting it out and seeing which way things are going to go. So, but, you know, obviously this can mean a lot to the average investor. It can mean the difference between retiring at a point when somebody would want to, and maybe having to wait quite a while to be able to retire. So you don't want that to happen. Jeff and I have both talked to people over the years who've said, oh, I would have retired in 09 if 08 hadn't happened, or I would have retired in, you know, 2004 if 2002 hadn't happened. Those people are real. Many of them are still working. Many of them are still doing things they'd really rather not be doing. So this isn't a game. And I just want to encourage you, if you haven't had an opportunity to check and see how much risk you should be taking, this would be a great time to do it. We're not all that far from all-time highs. And we're also not that far from all-time interest rate lows. So it's a very, very strange time. So one of the things that we always remind people to do, Jeff, what is that saying we have here at the 401k Latte Company?
Invest in a conversation.
And we want to say, do it soon.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.